You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome, everyone. Oh, my gosh. We're here. It's another week. Is gone. Another episode here of the Rational Revolution. You're on the right spot here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I am Mark Becker. It is such an honor to be here every week as we are again this week. And we are here with a returning guest and a friend of the show, Jeff Cabaservis. He is the Director of Policy Studies for the Niskanen Center. What is the Niskanen Center, you say? Well, let me tell you. It is an American think tank based in Washington, D.C., and it advocates for market-oriented principles regarding environmentalism, immigration reform, civil liberties, and an effective welfare state. So, how's all that going? How are we doing with that?
It's good to see you again, Mark.
Thank you for
being
here.
Well met under ill circumstances, to use a Shakespearean phrase.
Yeah.
You know, I'm coming up from Washington, D.C., where the streets are full of National Guardsmen under
Trump's
own personal authorization. He's got his own Praetorian Guard in place. And I just came up through Bethesda, where the traffic could have been controlled by the FBI carrying out Trump's vengeance on his former foreign policy advisor, John Bolton, or it just could have been Bethesda traffic. Who knows?
Yeah.
But yeah, fun days we're living through.
My brother lives in D.C., and how has that been with the increased presence, I suppose, if you want to call it that?
So the police presence in D.C., the military presence, is something that you wouldn't necessarily notice in most parts of town, to be honest. It's concentrated in a few areas where, frankly, there isn't much crime, like on the National Mall. And there have been some, you know, clearances of tent encampments of the homeless. J.D. Vance and Pete Hegseth did a walkthrough of Union Station, the main train station here in town, to show that it had been cleaned up of undesirables. But I think most people are actually not really noticing it, except for a few very high-profile arrests. For example, an unfortunate a food delivery person on a moped, or some roadblocks that have been set up around town. Yeah.
Wow. You know, and I want to get into some stuff, but I think, like, it's such a performative BS thing that they're doing. And, you know, crime is at a 30-year low, yet it's rampant, and we have to send. And what's so stupid is, like, all of these other states are like, yes, I will send troops and National Guardsmen to D.C. to help clean up. What? It doesn't make any sense.
You know, crime by certain measures is at a 30-year low in D.C., but the murder rate is up from where it had been in recent times. And categories like auto theft, which are also pretty well reported, have also gone up, way up from where they were. Yes, maybe they've come down from what they were at their peak in the pandemic. The problem is that crime is actually an issue that people do care about.
Yeah.
It's a weak issue for Democrats. It's a strong issue for Trump. The fact that this is, as you say, performative, that he's not going to do anything to bring about a sustained drop in crime once the troops go away, it doesn't bother him. It's just a media moment. And I think it allows him to spread his message that Democratic-run cities, particularly cities run by African-American mayors, are hell holes, and he's the vanguard of all that's good and righteous in American history.
Right. Yeah. Yes. And what is exciting, too, is I heard today that the Midwest is going to be his next stop on this late, great tour. And Chicago, he's going to be cleaning up Chicago. I saw that news flash on my phone just a few minutes ago. So that's exciting. Look at us.
Yeah. Cheery times.
So when I was getting ready for this, I just was researching again the Niskanen Center. And the description I saw was market-oriented principles regarding environmentalism, immigration reform, civil liberties, and an effective welfare state. And I thought, well, let's go down those and kind of see, you know, how things are going. And, you know, with immigration, I think, you know, what we've seen is been haphazard, unorganized, and incredibly unjust. What does the Niskanen Center say how this has all been going, you know, these mass deportations and all of this stuff.
You know, but Iskanden Center was created 10 years ago with the idea that, you know, there were actually ways to bridge the differences between Republicans and Democrats, even on some of the most controversial national issues. And, you know, typically those kind of discussions would have to be held out of sight of the media cameras so that there wouldn't be any posturing for your different partisan audiences back home. But ultimately, there could be common ground. It's a lot harder to defend that proposition in today's Washington, to be sure, particularly on issues like immigration. I think some of what the people who work on that area at Niskanen and other think tanks like it around town are doing right now is simply calling attention to the ways in which Trump's push against immigration is counterproductive, damaging to the economy, tarnishing our image around the world, and ultimately undercutting some of the main sources of American strength. So it's a bit of a defensive position that most people are in at this point. But then again, you know, what we're also seeing is a turn in public opinion, where a considerable majority of people had said prior to Trump's second administration that immigration was a bad thing for America. Now,
you're muted again. Oh, there we go.
Now they're increasingly seeing the benefits of it.
Well, and I saw a speech that Donald Trump gave this week where he talked about, you know, like admitting that farmers are having issues with, you know, they've been here for years and now, you know, they're here legally, but now they're getting taken away and all this other stuff. So, I mean, this has been hitting many, many different fronts, from farm work to restaurants to, you know, here in Northeast Wisconsin, we have a meatpacking industry that's huge. This is decimating employers too.
Yeah. And, you know, I think what Donald Trump is at war with is not just immigration. In some level, it's human nature.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I know you'd like the edgy historical comparisons.
I would love that.
In 1944, Heinrich Himmler gave an address to the top leadership of the SS. And he complained about the German people, how that while in principle they were anti-Semitic and would say all Jews are bad, they would always make an exception for the people that they knew who happened to be Jewish. Oh, all Jews are bad, but this one person, he's a splendid fellow.
Right.
And I think we're now seeing that to some extent with even some of the most rabid antagonists of immigration to America. They think it's all bad and they're all criminals, except for this person who's been living next door to me for 30 years. They're great. No, don't deport her. Right. But that's not the way these things work.
And one of the things that I'm excited to have you here for is because you can here's a teaser in the last segment. I want to pick your brain to figure out where are we right now? Where have we seen this before? Because you talked about that last time, and I want to kind of hit that up a little bit. But then we go to environmentalism. We see, you know, the Canadian wildfires have been really impactful here in Wisconsin, and all they have to do is rake the forests, which are half the size of the continental United States. Should be easy. You know, ignoring climate change, and he today said that there's a war on wind power. Where is the United States with environmental issues?
You know, there actually, again, 10 years ago, looked like there was some room for common ground around something that was sometimes called an all-of-the-above energy policy, which is that the United States still has significant reserves of carbon-based energy, and probably we do need to continue to produce gas, natural gas and oil. But, you know, at the same time, the price of green technologies, particularly solar and wind, were coming way down, and there was even some agreement on the left that nuclear might actually play a significant role in the American power overall. And we're at a point now where I think everyone agrees that we're going to need much more power than we have right now, particularly as AI becomes a bigger part of all of our lives. Its energy demands are enormous.
Yeah.
And yet what we have right now is the Republican Party, really due to just Donald Trump's whims, that is antagonizing and cutting back on wind and solar. Donald Trump doesn't like wind because he claims it hurts birds. right. You know, so do cats. But, you know, right. I like cats.
And semis.
You know, I think some of the dangers of wind have been exaggerated, and some of the turbines can actually be adjusted in ways to cause fewer problems for avian wildlife. But the fact is that Trump and the Republican Party at this point are just trying to own the libs by damaging our ability to grow our energy resources in wind and solar, because they associate those with the left, and therefore that's bad. It's irrational. And again, if you actually get Republicans behind closed doors to talk about these things, they'll agree that it's irrational. Mm-hmm. But at this point, they don't dare to go against Trump.
Right. And as we're talking with Jeff Cabaservis, who's the VP of Political Studies at the Niskanen Center in Washington, D.C. Next up, effective welfare state. That's not great. How? What has the one big beautiful bill done to reforming that part of our society?
So part of the drawback of you talking to me is that I'm a generalist. I float above my think tank
at an altitude
of 39,000
feet. Yes.
So I get to see some of the broad policy landscape that we cover, but I'm hard-pressed to tell you some of the real details down on the ground. My sense, though, is that the One Big Beautiful Bill is actually going to cut back on the kind of government that actually many of Trump's own supporters in the working class really depend on.
Right.
And although the cuts, particularly to Medicaid and Obamacare, are not going to kick in until after the 2026 midterm elections, conveniently, I think people are going to be seeing an awful lot of things they had become accustomed to, dependent upon, now going away as a result of these cuts. And, you know, it'll be hard to avoid the cultural class politics where these monies are being taken away from the working class to add to the corporate interests who already have quite a lot.
Right. And I saved this one for last because I do think this is one that we're going to talk about for a bulk of the rest of the show, and that's civil liberties. I from what I have seen so far, it seems like the Trump administration is hell-bent on eroding everything that they possibly can, and the Republican Party, you know, my former party, has just ushered him to do whatever the hell he wants to whoever the hell he wants, and it doesn't matter. And it kind of starts, look at the war zone claim that they say in D.C., the performative authoritarianism, you know. Where are we with civil liberties today?
You know, civil liberties is one of those things where everyone believes in it as long as it applies to their side. We should have the ability to say whatever we want. The other side, I'm not so sure. So in the last few years, we've certainly seen lots of so-called cancellations from the left, undesirables being prevented from speaking on campuses.
Yep.
But then again, we're seeing a lot of it from the right as well. And again, this is one of those hard American principles to uphold, to apply equally to the people with whom you disagree, as well as to your own side. And what we're seeing, I think, increasingly is just a kind of tit for tat in our politics as we become more partisan and polarized.
I don't know if, so I've been reading Jake Tapper's book about Joe Biden, and I think it's called The Original Sin, and it's about the left kind of covering up for his downward progression. And we got about 30 seconds left, but what I have seen in that book, and I like Jake Tapper, I think he does a pretty good job. Oh my God. Like what happened there, the left has so much a goodwill to get back from everything that they were doing, you know, to try to cover up for that. And we're going to talk about that and continue the civil liberties discussion here with Jeff Cabaservis, VP of Political Studies at the Niskanen Center, here on the Rational Revolution on Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back. You're on the Rational Revolution. I'm Mark Becker. Civic Media Radio Network, we've got my friend and yours, Jeff Cabaservis, VP of Political Studies at the Niskanen Center, all-around good guy. We're talking about I was reading the book from Jake Tapper about Joe Biden's downfall, and some of the things that the Democrats did during that time, from smearing the guy who was the special prosecutor investigating his holding of classified documents, and that, and trying to rewrite history and rewrite things that Biden was saying. He called the Emmanuel Macron the wrong name, but the name he called him was like the French prime minister who died like 30 years ago. Like, it's insane. It's crazy. And there's a lot, I think, that the Democrats have to answer for before they can be trusted again to actually have some power, and we're talking about tit for tat. Where are we with that? It's not great.
No, you raise a big point here, which is that the Democrats aren't always holding power in the executive or the Congress, but the left broadly does hold power in a wide range of institutions that have a big impact in American life. The left has almost unchallenged sway over the universities, mm-hmm. Over much of the media, over many of the think tanks, many of the philanthropies that make the biggest difference in American life. And with power comes responsibility. And the left has not been upholding its responsibilities to speak for the entire nation, to be fair to all viewpoints, ideological and otherwise, mm-hmm. And to be inclusive and objective, and even transparent where it's possible. And the cover-up for Joe Biden is, I think, quite egregious.
Isn't it bad, though? Oh, my God.
Oh, terrible. Terrible. I mean, you're reading through the Tapper book, and you're just going, oh, my God.
Did you read it, too?
How could they do this? I did, yeah.
Yeah, oh, my God. It's so bad.
this is always the point where I have to point out that I'm still a registered Republican.
Yeah.
Not in my name, Democrats.
Right.
But, again, this is a case where you could argue there's a tendency in the press not just to play ideological favorites, but to suck up to power.
Right.
And when it was the early 1960s, the press wasn't recording on JFK's reckless sexual behavior.
Right.
And now they're not reporting on what was a widely understood secret among the Washington press community, which is that Joe Biden was not really capable of fully carrying out the duties of the president, particularly when it came to interacting with the public or even with foreign dignitaries.
And, can you imagine that 3 a.m. phone call?
It's a terrible thing. And frankly, it just gives validity to the conservative charges, that there is this vast rigged conspiracy against the average American, mm-hmm. and the Democrats are covering up, and who's really running the presidency and all the rest of it. So yeah, it's part of how the Democrats have lost faith with the American public, how their brand has been tarnished. And I think they have 2 decades worth of work to do to recover from this.
I was just going to ask, what do they have to do to get back?
American politics is thermostatic, as the saying goes, yeah. Right? So we get one party in power and we've turned the thermostat way up and we don't like that. We're uncomfortable. It's too hot. We're going to turn it way down. And then the next party gets in power and, woo, it's too cold. Let's turn it back to the middle. Except we never quite seem to reach the middle. It's always the shower is boiling hot or freezing mm-hmm. cold. But the fact is, this is part of why American politics is dysfunctional, is that neither party actually wants to move significantly toward the center. Neither party mm-hmm. wants to govern in the interests of people it perceives, not just as its opponents, but its enemies. And although the Republicans are leading the way in this, Democrats are not far behind in seeing the other party as illegitimate.
We had a representative here in Northeast Wisconsin named Reed Ribble, and he is a wonderful person. And I remember him coming to a Lincoln dinner when I was chairman of the Republican Party. And this was when, like, the height of Tea Party, and they were, just with their pitchforks and, and he told me, shut the doors. I'm going to say something that's going to piss him off. And he took out his Member of Congress card, and he says, this card means I don't just represent you. I represent all of Northeast Wisconsin. And he said that in a room full of people that wanted him to just represent them. It was a very hard discussion, and he took a ton of heat for it. I don't know if that person would have a lot of friends in today's Republican or Democratic Party, quite frankly.
In the past, there were more Republicans like Reed Ribble,
yes.
and there were more
yes.
moderate Democrats, partly because gerrymandering hadn't achieved quite the high state of technological art that it's achieved right now. And, you know, the old saying is true. It's gone from a situation where the citizens pick their representative to a case where the representative picks the citizens that he's going to choose to represent. But on the other hand, you know, it also, I think, might have been the case once upon a time that significant numbers of citizens in places like Wisconsin would have agreed with Representative Ribble that mm-hmm. the job of a lawmaker is to fairly represent the entire public, not just their own group, their own tribe, their own special interests. So I think some of this is on the American people, that we've lost what our founders would have called the civic republicanism that is an absolute necessity if the democratic experiment is going to succeed.
Where is truth? Is it here? Do we know? Where is that?
He's looking around the corner somewhere.
But like, I mean, in our political, we got a minute left. It's nowhere.
You know, there was a clip that you sent me of a Texas lawmaker saying that he had gerrymandered because we can. Yes. You know, and I think truth, as people increasingly see it in politics, is just a matter of who has the power. If we have the power, we can reorder the world in whatever way we want, and to hell with everyone else. And furthermore, the idea that anyone would put the interest of country above that of party or tribe seems increasingly ridiculous. Curiously, this is actually back to some of the philosophers of Nazi Germany, to return to that theme. Someone like Carl Schmitt would have been 100% in agreement. If you can do it, you do it. To hell with everyone else, friends, enemies, that's the only distinction that matters in American life. But that doesn't feel American. No. It's not us.
No.
I'm going to continue to believe that the American people will reject these dirty politics, these power politicians, the real unfairness that they're trying to reject.
We're going to continue this discussion on the other end of the break here with Jeff Cabaservis right after this on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back. You've got the Rational Revolution and the Who on Civic Media Radio Network. We're sitting down with Jeff Cabaservis. He did me a favor. He did a little tease that we call in the business about a clip we're going to talk about, because we're talking about redistricting and where truth is and all of this stuff. So I'm going to play the clip now, and then we're going to talk about this. So Conrad, hit.
Census off year when you just redistricted in 2021.
Because we can. We have the votes. It's legal for us to do so. It's legal for us to draw the lines based on political performance. We have three Hispanic predominated districts in South Texas that we believe that we can carve out for Republican leadership in the United States Congress. It's going to be a good thing for Texas. I don't spend any time thinking about what happens in California or Illinois or New York. I'm here to protect Texas and ensure that our voices are heard.
So because you can, why should you, though?
Because it's good for our party, it's good for our state, and we need to ensure that Donald Trump's agenda continues to be enacted throughout his second term. And we as Republicans see this as the difference between Democrats trying to impeach President Trump again during the second half of his final term as President of the United States, or accomplishing the agenda that all the voters in Texas by a significant majority sent him to accomplish.
So you're doing this for President Trump?
We're doing this for Texas. President Trump doesn't call me. I don't think he has my phone number. But what I would submit to you is this is the best thing for Texas and its representation in the United States Congress.
And Ronald Reagan rolls over in his grave. So what do you make of this whole redistricting thing?
I mean, that's quite a clip.
Isn't it?
I mean, it's loathsome. That's the only word that comes to mind. Of course, you can see, by the way, that guy's eyes dart about as if he's a rat in a trap.
Right.
That he knows very well that he is only doing this because Donald Trump, in effect, ordered the Republicans in Texas to find him five more seats so that he won't lose his majority in the House in the 2026 midterms. Nonetheless, you know, the other assumptions behind it are equally disturbing, which is that basically Democrats are illegitimate. They can't be represented because they're evil. It's in the best interest of Texas to have minimal or no Democratic representation. And that the extent that Republicans in the legislature can manipulate the system to produce the outcome that they want, then that is a good thing. You know, again, America's always had dirty politics since the earliest days of the Republic. Gerrymander, after all, goes back to Elbridge Gerry, who invented this way of packing his own districts to ensure his reelection. But, you know, again, the best traditions of American political life, the norms on which our civic culture depend, all go in the opposite direction. So, you know, again, if I have any hope in here, it's that people are actually going to be revolted by this kind of naked partisan power play. And often what you find is that these attempts to re-gerrymander, especially out of cycle, can backfire on the party doing it because they've actually spread their forces too thin. And when there's the inevitable revolt against the party in power, they actually get swept out to an even greater extent than they might have otherwise.
What this feels to me, kind of, you know, when you watch the Republican Party and watch what they do, and you know, I don't know. You have such a grasp of history and a grasp of worldly knowledge. What I see here is, I mean, it's almost Dear Leader-esque, where, you know, the truth is gone. This guy, they don't even hide it anymore. And it's everything that they do is to appease the Dear Leader. We have federal agencies typing in caps lock and emojis. And it's like the dumbing down of some incredible institutions. And like, in history, is there any examples of like what's going on? Not great. Well, ones, I would
imagine. No, it's not great. Anytime,
right.
Anytime you do get a Dear Leader in power, it's not going to go all that great for the country involved. You know, it's funny you mentioned Reagan earlier because I just 2 weeks ago was out at the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library and Museum in California for a conference there. And as you walk through the front door, there's, you know, the picture of Ron looking handsome with the cowboy hat. But below there is a quote that says, words to the effect of, I welcome all people here to come and look at the records that we are putting open to you. I'm not afraid of your judgment because I think we did the best we could and history will judge us well. And that attitude is so different from what we have here now in the Republican Party, which is that, you know, we're going to bend the rules and break them as much as we can to get what we want because we don't want the judgment of history. We don't want the open and transparent judgment of the American people here because we don't ultimately believe that we are doing anything that's truly popular. Because if there were, we would be open and transparent in the way that Ronald Reagan was open. We're just going to get 50 plus one. And if we can't get 50% plus one, then we're going to just bend the system so we never have to leave power. And, you know, it's tragic. I hope they don't get what they want because that would be the end of, you know, the American tradition as we've known it.
Right. Like that was a big statement right there. It would be the end of the American tradition as we know it. Is there anyone on the right who can kind of like, all right, we got to do better here?
You know, I've learned never to place an enormous amount of trust in the business community.
That's fair.
Whether Lenin actually said it or not, there was some truth to the old adage that he was going to sell the capitalists the rope that he would then use to hang them. But the fact is, if you're running a business right now, you might be the biggest Trump supporter in the world. But the fact is, you don't have reliable data anymore on which to base your business decisions because Trump is monkeying with the Bureau of Labor Statistics and a whole bunch of other institutions that are supposed to provide objective statistics, not the ones that are pleasing to the Dear Leader. And Trump is also just doing things like tariffs that are an outright tax on the American people that Ronald Reagan warned us against, that said it would always lead to our destruction, that have in fact led to terrible American economic collapses, seemingly at every 100-year intervals. Like last time was Smoot-Hawley in 1930, and before that was the Tariff of Abominations in the early 19th century. It's almost like it takes 100 years for the lessons of these tariff disasters to wear off. But yeah, we're back in it again, and if there's any hope of bringing this Trumpian irrational revolution to a halt, it would actually be, I think, pushback from the business community and the bond market, especially going south.
Well, and yeah, you said that anybody that tells him different, he fires, that he doesn't like the jobs numbers. Okay, well, we're going to fire the person and we're not going to put those numbers out monthly. We shouldn't do that anyway. It should be, you know, every quarter. You know, he doesn't like the fact that interest rates aren't going down, which I do think they should. You know, go and fire the second in command and talk about, you know, like it's the emperor has no clothes.
You know, and ultimately, this isn't going to get us anywhere we want to go. You know, at the risk of using your show as a venue for jokes.
The Soviet Union brought some
pretty hard times. People needed black humor to get through. So the joke has it that Stalin, Khrushchev, and Brezhnev are on the train to communism, but it doesn't seem to be going anywhere very quickly. So Stalin has all the engineers shot. The train still doesn't seem to be going anywhere. So Khrushchev has them all posthumously rehabilitated. Still no movement. So then Brezhnev said, okay, let's put all the window shades down and pretend that we're moving. And that's the way these things go. If you're going to shoot the messenger, then eventually you're going to end up going in any kind of direction that you want to head.
So is that kind of where we're headed? Is that the, you know, is this, you know, Soviets just damn the torpedoes, blah, blah, blah. I'm not listening to you. What's running our country right now?
You know, unfortunately, we're at the situation where the Democrats, as we've already discussed, have largely discredited their brand.
Yes.
And so people don't want to listen to them because they think that the Democrats are culturally way out on the limb and don't have the best interests of the country at heart. So people are going to vote for whatever the alternative is. And the alternative, unfortunately, is Donald Trump, who is both liberated from any kind of adult influence because the so-called adults in the room are all gone from this administration. Right. And also who's out for vengeance. And you heard in the comment of that Texas Republican legislator that this is just about vengeance. Democrats impeached President Trump in his first term. Now we're out to get them. And we're going to get them by taking away their seats in Congress. And we're going to get them by sending the FBI to the door of people we don't like. And we're going to do this and we're going to do that. You know, how does it end? Well, in one scenario, the Democrats come into power and do just the same to the Republicans as they've been doing now. But I'd like to think that maybe after some of these experiments in irrationality, that we collectively as the American people will take a step back. We will remember that it actually is moderation and cooperation that has made us the global success story we've been for the past 80 years, that we ought to return to the formula that's brought us so much prosperity and success.
But and this redistricting civil war is really a concern too. You know, Texas is going to do their thing and then Gavin Newsom, who is trolling, it's kind of funny, but you know, but it's funny, but not like that's not okay. Cause you do these districts and the likelihood of them actually going back to that.
You know, I'd put a broader point on this, which is that one party rule always tends toward disaster.
Yes.
Frankly, California was a much better place to be before Democrats took charge of everything. You know, holding every state office and supermajorities in the legislature. Now California is the most expensive, highest taxed place to be. It's just suffering in so many dimensions because it doesn't have the kind of reality check that Republicans used to provide in greater numbers. And typically what you'll find is that Republicans in blue states, just like Democrats in red states, tend to be the most moderate part of their party.
Yeah.
And you need that moderation, again, if you're going to actually address the real world as it actually is and find solutions that move us forward.
Well, and you have to have people that have the courage to have those hard discussions and stand up and, you know, and talk to the party and say, you need to pump the brakes here. Hey, maybe we shouldn't. Maybe we should tell, you know, the orange guy, dear leader, no, these are dumb ideas. You know, there's nobody that's doing that.
You know, there's a phrase from Goethe, the German philosopher, which is that unhappy is the land with a need for heroes. You know, I love it when heroes appear. You've been heroic in your own way, Mark. But if you're actually in a country in a time when you need people to be heroic like that, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
It's really much better if ordinary people do the right thing and the incentives are to do the right thing and the incentives actually operate in a way that everyone's better off by not doing this kind of self-destructive fratricide that we're seeing between Texas and California.
So we got a minute left here. What can people do if they see all of this and they want to get involved, but they don't know, you know, I mean, it's there's a lot. But like what can people do to be effective? I know.
You know, I'm not Little Miss Optimist here, right? But you know, there was a time in my life when I studied the dissidents in Eastern Europe. And, you know, yes, these were people of unusual courage, but a lot of them were people you've never heard of.
Yeah.
And all they really decided to do was live their lives as if they lived in a democratic, rational country. And I think that's part of what we need to do, which is that if you feel the urge to do something really partisan and tribal, step back from that. Act as if you lived in a country where both sides get along. And hold your leaders to account to the extent that you can through the democratic process. And if you see people doing things that are just dirty, ask your neighbors, doesn't this just seem wrong to you? Isn't it go against the values of fair play that we believe in? You don't have to get up on a partisan high horse. Just say, this is wrong. And it's wrong wherever we see it, in whichever party it manifests.
So speak up is what you're saying. Jeff Cabaservis, thank you so, so, so very much for your time. It's always a pleasure catching up to you, even though it's dark. But appreciate it very much. Be well, and we'll be right back here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Busted flat in Baton Rouge, waiting for a train, and I was feeling near as faded as
welcome back jeans. To the Rational Revolution. That song, of course, is a tip of the cap to our dear friend Chris Alfheim. Excuse me, Senator Kristen Dassler Alfheim, who is a dear friend of the show and a friend of ours. But yes, and so we're so happy to do this, and every week is wonderful. And my thanks to Jeff Cabaservis from the Niskanen Center. He's so brilliant, and I wish, God, these hours go by so fast, because he has such a breadth of knowledge and such a worldly perspective on what's happening. And it's usually he's very positive, like I try to be, but to hear him say, it's kind of dark, boy, that's interesting. And you know, it kind of gives me pause. And I haven't finished Jake Tapper's book, but you know, I think that us folks on the left-handed side of things, we do have to have a frank discussion about earning some trust back. And that's going to take a lot of work. And you got to be ready for that. Anyone, you know, in these next few months, it's going to be interesting as we get into midterm season and people are coming, and we've had some folks come on the show already who are running for office, and we're going to have someone next week who's running for office. That we have to be ready to lead. We have to be ready to take on some of these very difficult conversations. I'm not going to pat myself on the back, but I am very proud to have been on the right side of that debate. And I hope that there are people that are ready to step up who are proud to say, I've been on the right side of that debate. Because that's going to be important. It is so critically important. But yeah, I you know, and moving on from that, I want to take some time. I am not someone that will spike the football on a death. But this week we had someone who is no longer with us, who is quite possibly one of the worst people that I have known. And I don't know this person, but in society, Dr. James Dobson. And he was the founder of Focus on the Family. I remember as a kid growing up in a very religious household, and I give my parents all the credit in the world for kind of, changing their mindset, which is so incredibly difficult to do. And they did it. And so we grew up watching, you know, Focus on the Family, Adventures in Odyssey, and it's these programs for kids to talk about, you know, like softcore Jesus loves you type stuff, but then we don't like the gays and we don't like, you know, all this. It was it's some pretty bad stuff. And he died. Hooray. And you know, and I just remember growing up with my brother, who is a gay man and didn't really know what he was until he did. And just seeing that transformation in him and all the pain that he went through growing up in a conservative Christian setting that really wasn't good to people like him. And he posted a picture of him drinking champagne. And I cannot imagine the mixed emotions that would be, you know, of like, thank God he's dead, but my God, the harm that he caused tens of thousands of people. And it's still going on. I mean, like, Focus on the Family is absolutely still around, and people still worship the ground that guy walked on, and it's horrible. And I look at some of the things, you know, like this week where in Florida they removed the Rainbow Crosswalk outside of the Pulse nightclub, where 49 people were killed in one of the worst mass shootings in 2016. And, you know, and Ron DeSantis removed the Rainbow Crosswalk memorial because he said, our streets are not a political message. You know, like, shut the hell up, man. You know? And, you know, the Orlando mayor said that it was a callous political act, which it was. And I look at some of those things and I see we're entering a new school year. And I just it's so bittersweet. And we talked a little bit about my experience in school last week. And I'm hopeful, but my heart hurts for so many kids. And so, you know, like, can you imagine when like, let's say we tripped in school down the hallway and made a fool of ourselves, bags, you know, books go everywhere, papers go everywhere. You laugh about it. And 2 hours later, it's done. These kids, their missteps or a prank gone wrong or whatever, this is tattooed on them forever because of social media, because of cell phones in everyone's pockets. Like, you can't get away from that. And like the stress and the anxiety that kids today would have just walking through the hallways. And people like James Dobson made it so much more difficult then and now. And so my plea to all of you as we enter a next school year is teach your kids to be kind. Teach them to respect others, to be nice to others, and just teach them to be good. You know, because that's how all of this changes. As we talk about with Jeff Cabaservice, you know, where do we go? Who's going to do it? It's going to be them. It's going to be them because they saw us screw up and they saw all of the hurt and the pain and all of this absence of truth. It's going to be them that will say, hey, we got to do better, because we all got to do better, y'all. I thank you for listening to The Rational Revolution on the Civic Media Radio Network. I am Mark Becker signing off. Hey, we'll see you next week. Thank you so much for listening.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.